Hello and welcome to The Ordinary Knitter, the podcast that's mostly about the projects. This week, using technology in your knitting, pick up and knit, you could do something for my mum, and choosing your cast on and bind off with care. Hello and welcome to episode 20. I started off last week apologising for sound quality. Since last week, I've had absolutely zero opportunity to try and sort it out. I have wondered about trying. I think what I'm trying to do is rule things out as much as actually identify the problem. And I don't know if anyone has ever listened to The Digital Human presented by Alex Krotowski. It's a BBC series that looks at the way that technology and humans coexist and how they influence each other and that sort of thing. Quite interesting. And she said, Alex Krotowski said, that she records having built herself a little cave of sofa cushions. And I'm not quite at that stage yet, but I might try to build myself into a more soundproof setting a day when I've got a little bit more time. Today's one of those where I'm flying in, nattering on for half an hour, and flying out again. So I'll see if that helps. And for the time being, I know I keep saying this, but I really am tremendously grateful that people are sticking with it. Anyway, on to the real meat of the programme. Using technology in your knitting, I'm talking about in the context of using apps or using software, whether that's to help you keep track of where you're at with the programme, whether it's one of these really all-encompassing programmes where, a little bit like you can on Ravelry, you can create your stash with a tremendous amount of detail. And also, I've never actually gone this route on Ravelry, but you can also do the same with your needles. You can get programs where you do all that stuff, but also you put in a vast amount of detail about your program, your patterns. And there are also programs that can help you to design. And this came up in something I was listening to recently. And so I posted on Instagram and I was interested to hear what people said. And nobody said, oh yeah, I do absolutely everything via a screen. That just doesn't seem to be the preferred option. Maybe it is for you. Let me know. I'd be really interested to hear from somebody who does away with all this paper nonsense. There were sort of shades of grey. You know, some people used some elements of technology, some people didn't use any of it. And I was really thinking about this last night. I will talk in much more detail about something I've been up to over the last week, but part of it involves designing in the flat something which is going to be a hat. So it's, I mean, all knitting is obviously 3D, but this has to go from being a flat chart on a piece of graph paper to being a round object. And I think it must just be the way that my mind doesn't work, because I could not envisage it. I was ripping this graph paper out of the book and literally manipulating it into a circle to try to see how the pattern was going to work out. Excuse me, I'm just shutting the door, see if it improves matters. And my husband just idly made the comment, watching me wrestling with this. He said, oh, you can't envisage nets in 3D. And I thought, yeah, nets, that's what it is. And I remembered my children having homework where they have nets and they have to sort of predict what kind of shape it's going to be and all that sort of thing. And I thought, what I would love is a piece of software where you could write out your chart or draw your chart and then press a button. And you see this thing on documentaries sometimes, particularly medical things, where suddenly whatever's been designed is revolving on the screen almost as a 3D shape on the screen, if you see what I mean. I thought, that's what I need. I need to be able to, because for whatever reason, I don't have the part of the brain that allows you to envisage a flat shape in 3D accurately. I can imagine it, but it's not right. I thought something like that would be tremendous. I might have a little look. I don't do a lot of designing, but I seem to have gone through vast amounts of knitter's graph paper recently. I think what I mean by designing is starting from scratch and saying I'm going to write a sequence that allows somebody to create a cardigan from a few skeins of yarn and a couple of needles. So I don't do that kind of designing, but what I do is I will take someone else's existing bare bones of dimensions and shaping and so on, and I'll put a design in terms of a decorative design. I will add that in, and depending on what you're making, that's more or less straightforward. So do you use anything like that, anything really grand like that, that allows you to turn a flat shape into a 3D sort of rendered shape? Because I'd love to know, especially if it's open source, that would be really brilliant. But what I do use sometimes is a row counter. I've got a little app on my phone. It's called, amazingly, Knitting Row Counter. I've tried some other ones, but really, I find this is so often the case, I don't need, in terms of when I'm doing just that, I don't need anything particularly multifunctional. The one thing I'd like to be able to do is sort my projects alphabetically, because when you start a new project, you give it a name and it always puts the new one at the bottom, and just little things like that would be quite useful, but it's not a big deal. But I found I haven't used it all that much recently. I think it's much more useful for me when I'm doing something that involves a cable, because obviously every 6 or 8 rows or whatever it is, you're doing your cable, and I find that it's really a really tremendously useful tool then to help me keep track of where I am. But all the knitting I've done recently, because I've had a decorative design in it, it's been very obvious to me where I'm at any given point, and so I haven't needed to count rows. Just hasn't arisen. So I'd be very interested to hear what you do with that. You know, how do you approach that? I'm going to talk about things not in the order in which I introduce them, because hey, it's my podcast and I can. The reason that I've been doing all this is my husband casually said the other day, "Oh, you could do something for my mum." So my mother-in-law is not very well, and she's likely to be not very well for quite a little while. And he's putting together a sort of a little box of little treats. She lives quite a distance from us, so unfortunately we can't just knit round, but we did see her over the summer. And she has a bit of a thing for ladybirds, and he suggested a ladybird beanie. Great, I was very happy to do that. I didn't mind putting down the hoodie for my son. It's quite sweltering in the UK just again at the moment, just this week as the children go back to school. Outside at the moment, it's incredibly warm. So he's really not going to be needing an Erin jumper, you know, certainly for a couple of weeks, although in this country, anything's possible. So I didn't mind putting that down. I'll talk about that later and where I've got to with that. I've had some similar problems is too strong, but I've had similar issues with that, as I will be talking about here. So obviously the first thing I needed to do was find a hat pattern that I liked the look of and that I thought would be appropriate for her. But I'm not in a position to go out and buy a load of yarn, unfortunately, at the moment. I would love to, but I can't. So I had to look and see what I had in red and black, and the only thing that I have in red and black is the proper name. I've made a note of it. It is, yes, I bought it in Aldi, and I think it's their own make, but they give it a name. It's called Kirkton House, that Kirkton, that is the name they use for all the yarn that they sell. So this is Kirkton House Cozy Wool. It's a bulky weight wool, and it's 50% actual wool and 50% acrylic. Which reminds me, there's something that Prince Charles has been talking about this week to do with wool. I will make myself a note, and if I don't ramble on too much, I'll quickly mention it, otherwise I'll save it till next week. So I have quite a lot of this yarn. They were selling it off. It got down to a really ridiculous price, like £2 for 2 skeins, well, by the time they were wanting to get rid of it. I used it for Terry's pullover. I seem to keep mentioning that at the moment for some reason. I used the red for that for my husband, and I chose it for that because it is 50% wool, and he's fine with wool, doesn't cause him any problems. I shrivel in the face of it. Although I can knit with it. I suppose hands are a little bit sweaty, and you do so many things during the day. Even though I wash my hands, your hands build up a resistance, I think. So I can knit with wool, but I can't wear it. So this was a great thing to use, especially for a cozy hat. So I had my yarn, and I eventually tracked down a pattern. Because of the type of decorative design I was going to be putting into it, I didn't want anything ribbed. So then I had to bear in mind that there wasn't going to be much inherent stretch in this hat. Anyway, the long and short of it was that on Ravelry I found a free download pattern. It's by Knit Rowan, and it's called Snug Hat, which couldn't be a better description, because that's exactly what it is. So I started off obeying the instructions for this pattern. You used a 7mm needle, and for a small adult, because she is, my mother-in-law is very petite, you cast on 72 stitches. So away I went. I had an idea about what I wanted to do for the ladybird spots. I had an idea about what I wanted to do for the sort of broad black triangle that a ladybird has, as effectively their, what you might think of as their nose. So I had an idea, and I just quickly charted out how I was going to do the spots, as in how many stitches wide and all that sort of stuff. And away I went, and it really became apparent to me as I went along that this hat was going to be quite big. But I thought, well, you know, it may be misleading while it's still on the needles. So I carried on and carried on. And it got to the end, and it was just enormous. It's big on my husband, and he's got a head like a bull. So I obviously realised I was going to have to do something else. But I didn't mind, because I wasn't entirely happy with the way the spots had turned out. And the other thing, and I'll talk about this a bit more further on, I was umming and ahhing about whether to do floats across the back of the spots, or whether to do intarsia. Oh, on and on and on I went. And of course, I made a massive blooper, because the first one, I knit it, you knit it flat. I'm going to come back to that. The first one I knitted flat, because that's what the pattern said. And I did a mattress stitch up the back. It was all fine. It's just ridiculously far too big. So I thought, well, the thing I'm going to do then is I'm going to go down a size of needle. It didn't occur to me to do a swatch. I just don't swatch. Maybe that's my actual next frontier. But then the whole thing was so experimental that I'm not sure if I had swatched, it would have told me a great deal, really. So I went down to 6mm needles, and that's a much better shape. But then I thought, well, when you've knit a hat in the flat and seamed it, I always feel that it's never quite as neat on the crown as I would like it to be, because I just couldn't pull it. It was essentially pulled closed, but I just felt it was a bit messy, a bit lumpy. So I thought, I know, I'll do it in the round. That's what I was saying I was going to come back to. Of course, as I knit in the round, I had no choice but to use floats for the spots, because you can't do intarsia in the round, because as you're not coming, you don't go along one way. I think of it like an old-fashioned typewriter. You go along one way, and then you go back along the way you've been, you know, effectively, and you don't do that with going in the round, so your yarn is never in the right place. And if the blocks of colour are only 3 or 4 stitches across, you can probably just about fudge that. But some of the spots are 7 stitches across, and I really didn't feel I could fudge that. And of course, once you get to the broad triangle for the nose, it's completely impossible. I mean, it's 20 stitches across at one point. So I soon realised that wasn't going to work out. But not until I'd started the nose. I'd fudged it all the way till there, and I suddenly realised. And then I thought, oh, well, perhaps I could try going back a few rows and just frogging back, and then I could split it. Oh, and I'd faced the same question when I picked up for the hood, for on my son's hoodie, for the actual hood bit, but I'll come back to that later. I need to talk about lots of things simultaneously, because I seem to keep meeting the same techniques at the moment. So then I thought, okay, what I actually need to do is knit this in the round until I've finished the increase rounds, because the way I've charted out the spots, none of the spots come into the increase rounds. So that's what I've done. I've used Judy's Magic Cast On, which I use for socks. It's a wonderfully neat cast on. You have no hole at the apex of the garment. So I've done Judy's Magic Cast On, and then I've done all my increase rounds in the round, and at that point I have then started knitting back and forth I have carried floats across behind the spots for the main part, and I'm now down, just last night I got to the beginning of the nose, and I've decided to do this next bit in tarsia. So I think for the effect that I want, which is a nice flat smooth crown, but also the benefits of using intarsia for the nose, I think that's been the best way to do it. And then I will obviously seam, it's going to be about three quarters of the hat will need seaming at the end, but that's okay because that seems to be something I've sort of got the hang of. But even so, even doing it like that, when I first started off doing it, I wasn't happy with, I had an issue with my tension on one side of the spots, and I couldn't work out why, and I thought maybe I'm not bringing the yarn in correctly. So I went and had another look at Stacey Perry, Very Pink Knits, one of her videos about intarsia, which I've watched once or twice before, and I thought, no, I am doing it right. And I suddenly noticed something, and she didn't say she was doing it. I think it's one of those things, and we all have these little ticks that are innate to how we knit and we don't even consciously realise them. And I realised that after she'd brought in the new colour and she had sort of knitted one or two stitches, she gave her original colour a little tug so that it was just maintaining the tension at the point where the new colour started. And I've been doing that ever since, pearl and knit rose, and it's made all the difference. My tension is always going to be faintly ropey around intarsia, I think, but that has just made an enormous difference. At one point, it wasn't a hole in terms of having dropped a stitch, but because my tension had been so poor, at one point I had a hole I could stick my finger through. So I'm much happier. I've actually lost track of what version I'm on because I've pulled out, I've ripped out so many times, but I'm much, much happier now with how the hat is progressing. And as I say, I've just started the nose, so we'll see how it turns out when it's actually finished. I also noticed, though, annoyingly, having said all that, I've goobed on one of the spots. I don't quite know what happened. I was also watching Victoria at the same time last night, and I just got slightly too distracted by Rufus Sewell, and I've slightly ballsed up one of the spots. So I'm going to use duplicate stitch, and I've looked this up recently because one thing I want to do with this hat is have a thin black line, just one stitch wide, that goes from the apex of the nose all the way over the back of, all the way to the other back of the hat, to replicate the point where a ladybird's wing cases meet. And I just couldn't, with having to separate a knit flat for the main part, I just couldn't work out how to do it. I suppose I could have had the part where the hat splits out side on to the face of the ladybird. I could have done that. That's sort of what I was doing at one point in one of its previous incarnations, and it played havoc with my spot spacing, which is this business of just struggling to see things in 3D. I sort of gave up the struggle on that. I can do arithmetic, but I'm not a natural mathematician or, what's it called? I'm not geography, not geometry, that's it. I'm not a natural geometra, if you like, or geometress, and I just gave up. I was unequal to the struggle of trying to work that out. So I've done it how I've done it. And I was looking up, I was desperately trying to find the phrase and eventually tracked it down because I was looking under the wrong search terms. So I found a tutorial for duplicate stitch. So that's what I'm going to use to do the black stripe over the crown of the head. And I'm also, I think, going to see if I can use that to sort out where I've gone wrong on this spot. It's only two or three stitches I need to change, so I might get away with it. And I've also noticed on the hoodie for my son, at one point on the TARDIS, I mean, for anyone who's got kids, one of the major features of the summer holidays is constant bloody interruptions. And you get to the stage where you do just lose your train of thought a bit. And once or twice, I've just, without consciously realising it, by the time I've dealt with something, come back, picked my knitting up, or just answered another question, I've for some reason it's like my mind is reset and I don't pick up again where I left off. I seem to either jump slightly forward or jump slightly back, probably the last time I actually consciously paid attention to what I was doing. So it's not a majorly big deal. It's just at one point on a Dalek and at one point on the TARDIS I can see where I've just done a couple of stitches the wrong colour. I also find I'm prone to do that when I'm battening down my floats. I sometimes, without thinking, I knit with the colour that I'm battening down instead of anchoring it behind my active stitches. So I haven't actually started using the duplicate stitch yet, so I'll report back when I get to that point. I mentioned my son's hoodie. I've obviously been talking about that a lot recently. The body is done. I haven't seamed the sleeves or the sides yet, and there's vast amounts of spaghetti hanging off it because I've got so many ends to weave in from all the decorative stuff. So it's far from exactly finished, but I'm on the home straight because I am now doing the hood. And I have knit... The jumper is based on a jumper called Lawrence, which I've spoken about recently, which I've made for my son. And Lawrence is designed with a round neck. And when you're doing Lawrence as it's meant to be made, you pick up and knit from the neck hole, and you then do X of ribbing. But in this case, I'm not doing ribbing, I'm doing a hood. So I thought, oh well, the same principle applies. I will pick up and knit, but obviously I'm not knitting a collar in the round, I'm knitting a hood. Now initially, and this would have been a really fascinating look, I thought, oh, I'll knit it in the round. Well, you can just imagine, it would have been some kind of built-in balaclava. So I soon realised I was being a complete idiot. This is what I mean about struggling to see what I'm doing or imagine the finished process that I've started in 3D. It's fascinating. I never realised that I lacked that ability, but I'm sorely conscious of it now. So I obviously realised, no, that's not going to work. And as I did when I was dividing for the front of the jumper, I went back to my tried and tested, but now sadly too small hoodie pattern. It doesn't go up. I'm doing an age 8 for my son because he's rising 8. This lovely pattern that I used before doesn't go up to a size 8, but it's perfect but too small. So I'm happy to go back and operate principles. But I realised that the hood is knitted, you knit it separately and then fold it and then seam it and then graft it on, and I realised that actually I struggled and struggled and struggled to envisage that in 3D, but I think I was right in saying that the seaming and the points would have been in the wrong place. It would have been like turned through 90 degrees or 180 degrees or something, not quite sure, but it wouldn't have been right. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have to work this out for myself. So basically what I'm doing, I've obviously left a little chunk in the front, so the hood doesn't literally come to a point at the base of his throat. I've left, I don't know, 5 or 6 flat sort of plain just stitches, and then I've knit up. So it's like a stand-up collar that doesn't quite go the whole way around. And what I'm going to do basically is knit it up and up and up until it reaches the top of his head, and then seam it. And so what I'm hoping is that the rest of it will obey gravity and he'll get a kind of Obi-Wan Kenobi effect, which he'll probably like because he likes all that sort of thing. That's my theory at the moment. I haven't been able to find any patterns that do what I'm trying to do, probably for a very good reason, because it's probably a bit of a crap thing to do. So that's what I'm trying to do, and that's what I was referring to when I said there's been lots of pick up and knit, because that's what I had to do for the Lawrence sweater. And actually I started that and then I pulled it out and started again, because there were a couple of holes. I'd obviously done something slightly different. Well, I thought I had done something slightly different at a couple of points than elsewhere. So I ripped it out, did it again, being very careful to do exactly the same thing on every single stitch all the way around. And I've got 2 little holes in exactly the same place on the Lawrence sweater. So I've just come to the conclusion this is something to do with the construction of the sweater. And I've just sort of left it. I didn't used to enjoy pick up and knit very much. It's one of the reasons why I turned to the Flegel heel. heel on socks because I didn't enjoy the part where you had to knit the heel flap and then you pick up or something, don't you? I can't remember now, it's so long since I've done it, but I remember there was an element of picking up stitches, and I always felt it was a little bit untidy, and I still do feel that it's a little bit untidy. But there are some situations where you don't want to graft something on for whatever reason, or you want something to appear to just grow seamlessly out of some other part of whatever you're knitting. So I chose to do it this time, and I'm getting better at it. I still think probably I'm doing it the way I do it, and probably I should go and watch an instructional video and make sure I'm doing it properly, but it's essentially working out. So I may not be doing it exactly how you're meant to, but I think it's okay. But the thing I've realised is there's going to be a huge amount of knitting in this hood. I'm really quite surprised, actually. I mean, probably if I was doing following a proper pattern, it would all be okay. But because I'm choosing to go around the houses, I'm probably knitting the actual thing much bigger than it needs to be. So we'll see what the end result is. But when my husband said, oh, you could do something for my mum, it was like, yeah, fine. I was very happy to put the hood down. It's pretty mindless, but it's not very exciting. I had originally thought, oh, I know, I'll put a white edge round the front of the hood because that will fit in with the cream edge on the cuffs. I know, cream cuffs on a jumper for a small boy, but that seems to be the design scheme I've arrived at. And there's the cream welt and then the cream background that's got the decorative sort of panel on it round the foot of the jumper. So I thought, oh, I'll put a cream edging on the hood because that'll all fit in. So what did I do? I picked up a knit and did my first few rounds in cream. And then I suddenly thought, oh, that's not going to be the edge of the hood, is it? No, that's the base of the hood. So again, I come back to this issue of just not being able to envisage where what I'm doing is going to end up. So anyway, I ripped all that out and did it again, and I'll see. I probably won't end up with a cream edge to the hood because I have a feeling I'm going to get to that stage by the time I finish this bloody hood. I'm going to get to the point where it's fine. It's absolutely fine. And I don't think my son is going to complain. Well, that's really what I've been up to. Lots of hoods, lots of ladybirds, and having chosen how I was going to structure this hat, and also thinking about the cast off for the proper Lawrence jumper, not wanting the frilly edge, it really got me thinking about how we choose our cast ons and our bind offs. And I thought really what it comes down to is the function of the overall garment, but also the function of the actual part that we're casting off. Because obviously with something like a jumper, you're casting off in several different places. Well, for the average jumper, I'm sure there are some that are made in one bit, but you're casting off in several different places, whether it's the neck or the hem, depending on how you do it, and the sleeves. You might be knitting the sleeve completely separately, or you might be, as again with the Lawrence jumper, you pick up and knit on the armholes to create the arms. So I've had pick up and knit on the armholes and the neckline for two jumpers in a row now. So I don't mind it so much. It used to be something I was a bit kind of but I don't mind it, actually, in a funny way. I actually quite like it, but next time I have to do it, I will watch a video to make sure I'm actually doing it properly. So you've got the function both of the item and of the part of the item that you're casting off. There's how you want it to look, and there are also the type of stitches that you're casting off or grafting. And I was thinking about what I tend to do. Many things that I knit need to be stretchy somewhere because I so often knit clothes. So socks, jumpers and hats and gloves probably being the main things. So if I am if I'm casting on from the bit that needs to be stretchy, so if I'm doing a hat from the brim up, or if I'm doing gloves from the wrist up, I will use Jenny's Stretchy Slipknot Cast On. This has now become my standard cast on. Here's me saying, oh, well, if I'm doing this or that, I'll use it. To be honest, I tend to have a reason not to do it. So perhaps with the lace knitting that I was doing a few weeks ago, I don't think I would use it for that. I might use a cable cast on for that, but that's not something I use all that often. So Jenny's stretchy slipknot cast on is absolutely brilliant. It's a, well, I don't know if it's the same as the thumb cast on. It's a form of thumb cast on. You create a slipknot, stick that on the needle, and then you waggle the needle around with the yarn, and you get this wonderfully stretchy cast on. The only thing I've found is it depends on the yarn that you're using, because sometimes it's a bit like when your seatbelt locks. Sometimes I find the yarn just locks and you've got this huge loop. You haven't tightened the loop on the needle because the yarn has locked before you've been able to do that, and that is really irritating. So if I'm using a yarn that decides it wants to behave like that, then I have to go back to the drawing board, because it's just impossible. You can try and encourage each individual stitch, but you know, if you've got a cast on the best part of 100 stitches, that's just a nightmare. So I'll have to have I go back and have a sort of another thing and try and track something else down if I'm doing that. But generally I find that's okay. If I am casting on something which I'm going to be knitting effectively in the round, like socks or like this hat, or if I'm doing mittens from the top down, then I use Judy's Magic Cast On, and that I think is a pure piece of genius, to be honest. You hold your needles parallel and you twist the yarn around each one in turn in a certain way. I'm not trying to teach you how to do it. I'll put links to all of the various videos, but the lovely thing is that I do all my socks toe up. You get this wonderfully neat, smooth piece of knitting over the end of the toes. There's no seaming, and I really love that. That was an absolute revelation. It's one of those where you think, what? No, what? It looks, you just think, oh, I'm never going to get the hang of how she, now I do it without even thinking. But I often find this with the videos. You think it's some kind of dark art, and suddenly the penny drops about how a little twist they're doing in the yarn or something like that. So those are absolutely fantastic. So those, Judy's Magic Cast On, Jenny's Stretchy Slipknot Cast On, they are my two standard cast-ons these days. There are very few projects for which they're not appropriate or wouldn't work. When it comes to binding off, if I'm binding off a cuff, which I do with socks because I knit them toe up, I use the same person. Her name is Jenny Stamen, I think. Jenny's Surprisingly Stretchy Bind Off. And what this involves, essentially, you're doing a yarn over at each point. So you end up with three stitches on your right-hand needle, and you stick your needle through the bottom two, and as a oneer, you take them off the end of the needle over the stitch that's at the top of the needle, and this gives a wonderfully stretchy bind off. The only thing you will find, though, is when you look at the finished article, it has a slight it has a little bit of a frilly edge. I think I was talking about this recently. When you're wearing a sock, that's not a problem because the sock cuff is at full stretch. Well, it is if you're my husband and you're wearing socks. So you don't see the frilly effect. I think I was talking about it in the context of the neckline on the Lawrence jumper. My son doesn't want a frilly edge on his jumper. So although it would have been great for the stretch, it wasn't any good for the overall look of the finished article. So as I think I said when I was talking about it recently, somebody advised me to use the Russian bind off, and that's absolutely brilliant. Effectively, what you do is to begin with, you knit two stitches. You then put them back onto your left needle, and then you cast them off by knitting the two together. So then you've got one needle still, you've got one stitch on your right needle, you knit the next stitch on the left needle, you've got suddenly two stitches on your right one, you put them back on the left, you knit them together, and so on and so forth. So you get a lot of stretch in that, but you get a flat edge. So that's very useful. Again, I'll post a link to a video because I just needed to refresh my memory for something for that recently. One of my favourite bind-offs now, depending on what I'm making, if I've got live stitches, I like the three needle bind-off. I think it's a really elegant way of binding off. There's no guesswork. You haven't got to try and line things up and match them. You're casting off stitches in parallel from two needles at the same time, and you get a lovely smooth seam. But anyone who listened to when I was talking about doing this recently on the purple hoodie that I'm making for my son, just make sure you do it the right way round. I seem to have rambled on. I think we'll save Prince Charles for another day, as we will also a chat about knitter's graph paper, which I've been using a lot of recently, and I've got a few things to say about knitter's graph paper. I really never imagined that one day I would be somebody with an opinion on knitter's graph paper, but there you go. I will put links to everything on the show notes. I've been a little bit quiet on social media recently, partly because I've just been so busy, partly with the knitting. This hat really has absorbed my brain for about 48 hours now, but also end of the holidays, stuff going on, you know how it is. So I'm on Twitter, I'm the Ord Knitter. I haven't put much on there because knitting is so visual. I tend to use Instagram more, but I do pop up on the Twitter account, but not as much as I would like. On Instagram, I'm the Ordinary Knitter. I post more on there, post more of a variety. Am I anywhere else? I don't think so. I'm here. I'm on theordinaryknitter.net as well. If you want to get in touch, you can contact me at heather@theordinaryknitter.com. I hope your ears haven't been too split by the sound quality on this episode, and I look forward to speaking to you next week. Bye!